105.4 Magic 105.4.
Right, well, here we are, Sunday evening. It's Magic 105.4 and time to, I think this could be a rather special indulgence as we go deep and indulge with Jackie Collins, one of the world's most prolific authoresses, and I have to say, one of the biggest sellers.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, welcome along.
25th book.
Well, I know it's incredible when you look back at all the books you have done and you kind of think, yeah, read. You know, we've read them all. They've been part of our lives growing up. And not only in books, of course, but so many of them being turned into some great films that we've all loved.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm always getting these girls saying to me, I get 15, 16-year-old girls and they go, you know, I started reading you under the covers. I pinched my mother's copy and I had my flashlight and I was reading You Taught Me Everything I Know About Sex.
Yeah.
And I go, well, I hope your boyfriend's not disappointed. And they go, oh, no. Not disappointed at all.
Well, it's a bit, it was like early sex education, because, you know, they're very raunchy. All your books are raunchy.
Yeah, but you know what it is?
Not sleazy, raunchy.
No, raunchy is a good word. I like the word raunchy. Mm. The late Louis Malle, what did he call me? A raunchy moralist. Yeah, which I like because my books are very moral, but they are raunchy. I write a lot of different characters that I write great marriage sex. Lucky Sant'Angelo, the character in Drop Dead Beautiful, has great marriage sex. And you don't get that in books very often.
No.
What you get about married sex is comedians going, ah, you know, he's married, he doesn't do it anymore.
Yeah.
She just, you know, nags and gets him to take out the garbage. So so I think it's kind of nice to put in books. But the thing about sex in books is if you don't care about the character, you don't give a damn about their sex lives.
Mm.
Think about it. Think of a porno movie, for instance. I mean, after 5 minutes, you're absolutely bored, aren't you?
Mm.
Aren't you?
Yeah, no. Well, I've never watched these things. No, you too, because they
oh,
never
bother.
You've
been in a hotel on the weekend.
They never
develop
any characters. You're true.
No,
it's
exactly.
Just meat.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they all look like they're having a lousy time anyway.
Yeah. Well, now, let's play a song, and then we'll talk more afterwards. So, in fact, the perfect song that you have chosen, this wasn't one we're putting in,
yes,
something we've put in your mouth here, is Marvin Gaye's Sexual Healing, which seems to be the perfect way to start.
Absolutely.
Talking to Jackie
Marvin
Lollis.
Gaye was so fantastic. I mean, I met him only once, unfortunately, and I thought he was an incredible man with incredible, a wonderful spirit, you know? Mm. He had such a wonderful spirit. Not only did he write great music, but his lyrics were so meaningful, too. Mm. So I think Sexual Healing is fantastic.
Perfect. Right, it's Magic 105.4. Jackie Collins, our guest tonight on Indulgence. Sexual Healing, Marvin Gaye, the perfect way to set up an interview with yourself.
Of course.
You do love sex and raunch, and one thing that always...
Don't we all?
We do. And is that why yes, you're so incredibly successful? Because deep down, however rich, poor, or successful people are, we all like similar things.
You know, I think I tap into something that women especially love to read about. I think I write erotic sex as opposed to rude sex. Mm. A lot of men, you know, they write like gynecologists, and you go, oh, yeah, I don't think so. But in Drop Dead Beautiful, for instance, I have the wife, the neglected wife of the gangster,
mm,
who is living in this fantastic villa outside of Mexico City. And he won't go near her because she had his children. So he's not going to go near the place where his children came from. And that's a kind of gangster mentality. And as she looks out of the window and she sees this great looking gardener, and he's kind of got this shirt on, but he keeps on taking it off because it's so hot. And he's got these, you know, fantastic abs and rippling muscles. And it's kind of like Lady Chatterley's for the 2000s. And, you know, she has an affair with him, but of course he doesn't speak English. And what better to have an affair with a man that doesn't speak any English? You just, you know, point him in the right direction and away you go.
The language of love.
So women are loving this book because they all go, oh my God, those scenes between Irma and the gardener, mm, are so hot.
Well, weirdly, I'd written that down because it's...
Oh, really?
Yeah, I had. Yeah, look, because this frustrated 32-year-old. And,
yes.
And it's a cliche, isn't it? The gardener, the sex, or the pool man. But here he was, this fit
It's
young...
a total cliche, but you know what?
The clichés happen
you
because
write
of...
It, yeah, you yeah, write it in your own way. And
yeah,
I think what I do... I mean, every story has been told before. I mean, I can't come up with anything original. Well, sometimes I do.
Yeah.
But no, most stories, there's 6 stories in the world. I mean, there's only so many things that can happen to a person. And I started to write this, and my editor said to me, oh, you know, I don't think she'd sleep with the gardener. I said, well, you try being in a fantastic villa outside Mexico City, and you're not allowed to see anybody at all, and you see this great horny looking guy. What would you do? And she goes, oh, yeah, maybe you're right.
Sounds like a woman talking from experience here, Jackie. What's your pool guy like? Or shouldn't we ask?
No, I've never been in an isolated villa. But when I wrote Hollywood Wives, the opening scene of Hollywood Wives was the frustrated wife looking out of the window and seeing the, I don't know if I can use this word on your show, probably it's Sunday night. Oh, it's Sunday. Maybe not. Okay, she watched the pool guy blanking in her swimming pool. She became polite.
No, blanking. I think yeah, blanking's fine. Lovely.
Yeah, I could have used the P word, but I didn't.
Yeah. Okay. No, fair enough. But it's interesting. The common theme with all of yes. your books, or majority of your books, is you always have these very strong females.
Yes.
Strong females that are mouthy, in fact, and they'll say and do what many other women probably wish they could do.
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, I write.
Is that
characters.
The success? Is that why people love your characters?
You know, I was interviewed earlier by a girl, she must have been about 23 or something, and she said, you know, I grew up reading your books, she said, and you gave me strength to be the woman that I really want to be. She said, I don't want to be that little girl who just agrees with everybody and, you know, does what her boyfriend thinks she should do. I think women really, when I started to write, were looking for strong women, because I was reading books, the women were having breakdowns in Harrods. I mean, what the hell was that, you know? I'm waiting for the guy to say to them, oh, I'm going to marry you. And they go, oh, isn't that wonderful? I can't wait. I don't think women want to have that kind of a life anymore. Mm. You know, women go out, they have jobs, they're independent. They like to live their life the way men live their lives when they're single. And I think everybody should do whatever they want to do when they're single.
Because when you were growing up, it was no doubt like Mills and Boone has always been very successful. But that's
I
kinda,
never read
it's
Mills
the antithesis
and Boone.
Of this.
I read
it,
Harold
really?
Robbins and Did Mickey you? Spillane.
Okay. Yeah. I can't imagine.
Mills and Boone. Are you kidding?
Well, no, I was going to say, if that's the opposite of everything you say here, that
yeah,
probably people
yeah.
would grow up and that sort of romanticized.
You see, Harold Robbins was a very good writer, fantastic writer. But he wrote women who were either in the bedroom or in the kitchen. So it was a question of sex or cooking. But when I started to write, my women do everything. They did both.
and the
men cooked too. and they did everything else. They were in the boardroom as well. You know, yeah. Lucky Santangelo, this character that I've written about in Drop Dead Beautiful, this is the sixth book about her. And she's done everything any man would, you know, give his left leg to do, including, I can't say that, it's too rude. But
you say anything you like. We can edit.
Oh, okay.
You just say it. We'll see how it goes. I want the truth.
No, I mean, when she took over her father's business in the original book, Chances,
yeah.
you know, she actually, people kind of dismissed her because she was a woman. So she went to this guy who's not putting up the money in the middle of the night. She took one of her henchmen with her and she just held a knife to his most precious part and said, either you put up the money tomorrow or that's gone, babe. And women love that.
Yeah. It's
Pre-Lorena Bobbitt.
Yeah, exactly. Getting a bit dangerous after that, wasn't it? Perhaps you inspired her.
Oh, yes. I don't know. Yeah, but Lucky killed a guy in one book, and she did it with self-defense. She made it look like self-defense. But this man had murdered her mother, her brother, and her fiancé. So she had good reason to do so. And at the time, there was a movie out called Thelma and Louise, where they killed a rapist, and there was absolute outcry about this movie. Everybody went, oh my God, isn't it terrible? They've killed a rapist. Oh my God, how can women do this? Meanwhile, there was a Clint Eastwood movie out and there was a Sly Stallone movie out where they killed, like, you know, hundreds of people in the movie and nobody said a word.
Yeah.
So I thought to myself, you know, we've got to have a little equality here. And it was only fair. And she made it look like self-defense, so she got away with it. And nobody ever said a word about that.
Yeah, true.
That's my Lucky.
Yeah, that's your Lucky. And she is one tough bitch, isn't she, really?
She's not a bitch. She's not a bitch, okay?
Sometimes she comes across
as one. Fabulous, strong woman.
Okay.
Okay.
Do you not think sometimes she does come across as one? But is that perhaps that
no,
maybe...
No, she's not a bitch. She has great, you know, Venus is her best friend. Venus is like a kind of Madonna-like character.
Okay.
And she has great friends. She has a great marriage. She has fantastic children. In Drop Dead Beautiful, she has little Lucky, who's Max.
Max, who
is 16 and a wild one, just like Lucky was.
And she's tough. There's a lot of her mother in her, isn't there?
She's strong.
Yeah, she really is.
She's strong.
And that causes problems, doesn't it?
Yeah, because she meets this guy on the internet and she goes off to meet him, as a lot of kids today are doing.
Mm.
And, of course, he does not turn out to be the handsome teenager that he's posted. He turns out to be some old pervert and she gets into a terrible situation, which she gets out of herself. Which I like.
Mm.
She doesn't have to run to Lucky for help because she's going to be my future heroine.
Is she?
Yes.
See, a very modern storyline though as well, isn't it? Internet dating and all the problems of, you know, being someone, you can pretend to be someone
I'm a total popular culture junkie. I just watch everything. I read everything. I just love popular culture. So I do know exactly what's going on in every kind of phase. And I don't write one particular group of people. You know, I write a huge canvas. So, you know, little Max is 16, in Drop Dead Beautiful, and Gino is 95, and I wanted to kill him off, but nobody will let me. My daughter say to me, don't kill Gino, and the fans say to me, don't kill Gino. I mean, the guy is 95, what am I going to do?
He's going to go at some
point. I finally let his sex drive get down a little bit. What can you do?
Well, let's play a song, and then we'll come back. Let's talk about Gino, and let's talk about some more characters and where they're all going in this. For no particular reason, how about Gloria Gaynor, I Will Survive?
Oh, great song. Gloria Gaynor. My husband had a discotheque called Tramp, and we used to play that all the time. It was kind of like the anthem for midnight. You know, everybody would leap up under the dance floor. Everybody would dance to that song. And I think it's a great anthem for people who are going through difficult times. You know, maybe they're getting a divorce, or maybe their parents are getting a divorce. Listen to this song. It'll make you feel better.
It's Magic 105.4, and Jackie Collins is indulging with us tonight. Some songs and some inside gossip about her latest book, which is called Drop Dead Beautiful. Not obviously where she could have described herself as that, of course, but it's it's about her character, Lucky Santangelo, who is back again for her sixth installment.
Yes.
This wonderful lady who this time is trying to open up this big casino called The Keys.
Yeah.
And it's, well, it has all kinds of excitement around it. She meets her young daughter. Well, her young daughter we get introduced to, Max, who's quite a tough, feisty character.
She's a very feisty character. But I loved writing this book because I loved bringing Lucky back. I have a website, JackieCollins.com, and my readers come there all the time, and they would go, oh, I loved Lovers and Players, and this book was great, and Thrill was fantastic, but bring back Lucky. They just love the character of Lucky. So I brought her back, and I thought, well, she's not going to be this interesting because she's married to Lenny. They've got this fantastic marriage. Nobody will let me. I've tried to kill Lenny off in two books. Nobody will let me do it. In fact, my pen won't let me do it. You know, he was trapped in a cave in Sicily, and then he was carjacked, and nothing happens. He's always back with Lucky, and they have this great marriage. So I thought, well, I'll introduce some excitement by creating this villain, Anthony Bona, who is the worst villain I've ever written. I don't know where he comes from in my imagination, but this guy is a son of a bitch, and he's so interesting to write. I mean, you write this character, and he actually kills a woman during the course of the book by accident, but you have to read the book to find out why and how. And he is trying to stop Lucky from opening this casino, but he has this wife, the one who's having the affair with the gardener. And when he finds out about the affair, oh boy, I didn't even know what was going to happen, but as I'm writing it, it happened, and I went, oh, yeah, this is the worst villain I've ever written. Uh-huh.
Do your fans, of which, you know, you've sold 400 million books now, so your fan base is enormous worldwide. How much do they influence you on your future books and on characters where the storylines go?
The fun thing about Drop Dead Beautiful was I launched it in America a couple of months ago, and I did this casino tour. So we launched it in Las Vegas, and they actually had billboards up on the strip with the book and me on the billboards. And I actually had my own slot machines.
Nice.
It was so much fun. I felt like Wayne Newton, you know. I'm like, oh my God, I'm on the strip and I've got my slot machines. And but the fans would come by, you know, hundreds of fans would come by to do. I did signings in each casino. I went across the country. It was so much fun, though. And they do have a lot of input in the way that they don't want me to kill off Gino. They don't want me to kill off Lenny. They want more Lucky. And it's interesting listening to them. And they love the books. It's so nice to get that kind of input from people. They are just completely obsessed with the books, and they've been reading me for so many years, and they've read every book. And then I get all these new people, like 15, 16-year-old girls who come. They come with their mums. I think I'm one of the few readers who has the mum reading me, the daughter reading me, and grandma too. So it's kind of great. And dad. I mean, the guys always buy two books, though, and I always say to them, two books, huh? One for your wife, one for your mistress.
See, but not everyone does that. I mean, you say that, and you say that with a smile. I mean, you must know, and so many of your characters clearly are based about people whether they're friends or ex-friends or people you know of in your circle around Hollywood. But not everyone has a miserable marriage, does they? Not everyone's having affairs. And Lucky's very happy. Your heroine here, she has a great marriage.
Yeah, and I think I'm insightful into people's lives. I had an editor at one time, and she was a very attractive woman, and she lived on the West Coast, and her husband lived on the East Coast in America. And he used to come out and visit, and I said to him jokingly one day, oh, I guess you've got a wife and kids back on the other coast. And there was a nervous laugh. And I thought, oh my God, a year later, they were divorced and he had a wife and kids back on the other coast. So I do kind of tap into people's, you know, what's going on in their lives.
Mind you, if someone lives 3,000 miles from the other, it doesn't make for a great marriage to start with, does it?
No, but you're happily married, aren't you?
I'm very happily married.
I can tell because you have that. You have that spirit about you.
Okay.
Yes. I'm a bit psychic too.
No, I do. I'm very.
She said doing her quick Shirley MacLaine.
Very happily, yeah. I'm glad you said it. If you had said, God, you seem really miserable in your marriage at the moment. Definitely a bit to be edited out before my wife hears it. But I'm very happily married with three lovely little kids and it's gorgeous.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, it is gorgeous, isn't it?
I really resent all these comedians because I had a fantastic marriage that get up and go, you know, oh, marriage, oh. Oh, she's going to do this and she's going to do that and she's going to, you're never going to have sex again. It's ridiculous.
Mm. Actually, I think sex gets better the more you know someone.
Oh, role playing is really fun. And you can really get into role playing if you
look at it. What is, I quite agree.
What is going on? You know, I'm completely obsessed with Catherine.
What's your best
Catherine
role play?
Tate. Catherine Tate.
Okay, yeah.
I love her.
I'm above it.
Is she? Oh, I'm above it. Yeah.
I mean,
oh, she's
very funny.
She's just so brilliant.
Yeah, she's also a very good actress. That's what's quite scary about her. She's just doing some serious dramas as well. She's very good.
Oh, really?
Yeah, no, she's really, really very good.
Totally.
But
brilliant.
Am I bothered? Brilliant.
I'm above it, yeah.
The character. Well, let's play a tune.
Okay.
And then we'll come back and talk more. So how about Hot Chocolate, You Sexy Thing?
Hot Chocolate. Errol Brown is a great friend of mine. I've known Errol for years and years and years when he was back recording with Mickey Most, who was also a great friend. And I love Errol's take on life and the way he creates such great music and makes people feel good. So yeah, Hot Chocolate was a great group and Errol Brown the best.
He does. Yeah, he's got. We bumped
especially
into
when
him
in his tight pants when he's on stage.
Well, yeah,
which I always tease him about.
We ended up playing golf with him in the Bahamas a few years ago.
Oh yeah, that's right. He lives
obsessed
there now.
With golf.
He's obsessed.
So we ended up playing her, and he has got a great way.
Then you
about
must know
him,
Johnny Gold too.
I have met. Yes, I don't know him very well, but I have. Yeah,
he used to be my husband's partner when my husband was alive. Yeah.
Well, there you go.
There you go. Small world.
Small world.
Hot chocolate.
Right, Hot Chocolate, You Sexy Thing. There's a sex theme going on here, clearly, or a sexy theme.
I didn't pick them particularly. It just happened.
You see, it just came out that way.
Yes, I thought there was only one page. I never got to the back.
No, we got more to choose on, don't worry. Now, actually, let's just talk about some of those earlier ones that perhaps made people really fall in love with Jackie Collins, like The Bitch, The Stud. You know, I remember watching The Stud as a kid, watching the whole, reading it. And again, as a young man reading that, it was pretty raunchy. My sex education had consisted of watching Benny Hill programs and the girls running around in suspenders. So, you know, and a bit of titillation on TV and suddenly watching The Stud.
A lot of young guys read The Stud. In fact, my son-in-law read it. He said to me, I grew up reading The Stud and The Bitch. And we made a fabulous movie of that. That was really fun. My sister starred in the movie.
I know.
Brent Walker made the movie. And it was the soundtrack went gold or whatever it goes. It was a really fun movie of its time because I knew so much about discotheques because my husband owned Tramp and he owned the Ad Lib before that and Dolly's. And there was always the guy that ran the place. He's always the guy that gets all the girls. And I wanted to do a kind of Pal Joey thing so that he had the beautiful, young, innocent girl and he had the older woman who was going to teach him a thing or two. And in between you had the stud, you know.
Great.
Poor old Oliver Tobias, the actor, has forever been known as Oliver the Stud Tobias ever since he did our movie.
There are worse nicknames to have, though.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it was a fun movie to make. It was a really fun book to write. And I think The Bitch is one of the best-selling books in the airport still today because it's a short, fun read.
Yeah.
The Bitch was a much better book than it was film because we made the film of The Stud, which was incredibly successful. And they said, we want to do a film, with a series, but our actor wanted too much money, so I decided to do The Bitch. But what I did was I did a 10-page outline, and I had nothing to do with the movie other than the outline.
Okay.
They, of course, went off in a million different directions. So I sat down and wrote my book from my outline. So it's different from the movie. It's much better than the movie, she said modestly.
Yeah.
But it is, you know. And The Stud is a terrific movie. The Bitch is not. And so it was fun creating the character of Fontaine, who was a strong older woman. Aaron Spelling saw it and said, wait a minute, we should create a character in Dynasty. We'll call her Alexis Carrington Colby. And that's how that character was born. They totally stole Fontaine from The Stud. And Aaron told me that, actually. He said, we saw Joan in The Stud and we realized that she would be perfect for our show.
And sort of that Collins dynasty really began then, didn't it? With her, well, I mean, she was, pardon the pun, but
yes,
it was.
Yes.
I mean, she was so huge. You've both been so big and successful for such a long
time.
Yeah,
it was fun. We had a cover on Vanity Fair. It was fun. But the thing was, when we were shooting the sex scenes for The Stud, I said, very nicely, I said, you know, I'm doing another movie at the moment. I'd created a movie called Yesterday's Hero, which everybody thought was the George Best story, but it wasn't because they didn't put any sex in it. I wanted to make a movie that my children could go and see. So it was a fun movie. Ian McShane starred in it, and he was great. So I was busy on that movie, and I didn't go to the set the day they were shooting the sex scene. And I said, it should be very subliminal, you know, like The Graduate. You're not really going to see everything. Mm. Everybody agreed with me, and off I went. So I went off to the set of Yesterday's Hero. I came back the next day to see The Rushes, and I'm sitting there, and everybody is stark naked. Joan's on a swing, stark naked over a swimming pool. Oliver's naked. They're all naked. And I said, what the hell happened here? And they went, well, you know, we had a few tequilas. And so that was very funny. But I think it made the film very successful.
Was it strange? It must be strange for your parents at the time. You know, you think, right, you've got two lovely daughters. You know, one of them's an actress and then one of them's a novelist. Right, and you're writing about all this incredible sex. And not only that, then there are other daughters performing it on stage. I mean,
well, unfortunately, my beautiful mother never lived to see me write a book, which was very unfortunate for me. She died when I was very young. And my father was an interesting man. He was a total chauvinist. So I think he was totally shocked by my books, completely shocked.
Because he was such a chauvinist then, is that why you've ended up having these very strong male characters, very strong female characters? So sort of, I'm not saying getting back at your father, but that sort of whole way that men were.
You're a bit of a shrink too.
No,
huh?
I'm just asking the question. It just came to mind.
You're probably right. Yeah, you're probably right because I saw, you know, I had a very, very beautiful mother, but very soft. Mm. And she let my father get away with whatever he wanted to get away with. And probably I thought when I was a kid that it should be more equal. Mm. And that's probably why I did start to write very strong women.
Okay.
Because I'm a strong woman myself.
Yes.
And I don't think you blame anything on your parents. I think you create your own life, you know? I think it's very important for people out there who blame, oh, I'm a failure because my parents made me a failure.
Yeah.
You don't blame anything on your parents. You make your own life.
But obviously
girls can do anything. That's my message to women. Girls
you have
can
a
do
soft
anything.
Side, though, clearly, too.
Oh, of course,
I can
yes.
tell you do have a very soft side.
Yeah.
So I always think there's... Still in this day and age,
yin
here we are
yang.
In 2007, it's still hard for sometimes women to be very strong and aggressive businesswomen, for example,
yeah,
at the same time be considered feminine.
Because you said something very interesting earlier. You called Lucky a bitch because men, when women are strong, automatically get that word into their head, you know. And you would never call a strong businessman a b-. You know, you'd say, oh, he's great, isn't he, you know.
It's true.
That
is that so? There. So even I, and I try to be an open mind, have a mind about this thing. I'm still suffering from those same stereotypes.
Yeah, one foot in the dark ages. Yeah.
We're trying to step
really,
out of
honey.
It. No, we're trying to. No, it's true. But it just shows how it's in you, isn't it? For
yeah,
God's sake.
Absolutely. It is. Yeah.
Now, you apart from writing these incredible books, you obviously are passionate about traveling, passionate about photography. You're developing
I love
a series.
Photography, yes.
Would you like taking, what kind of photography do you like? People or do you like doing
well, people,
landscapes?
Well, I just went this weekend to Michael Caine's daughter's wedding, Natasha Caine, who married another Michael. She married another, not dad. And it was great. It was at the Victoria and Albert Museum, the reception. So it was fantastic. So I was just photographing everybody. You know, Michael Winner was at our table. I was photographing him. I was photographing Michael Caine with all his, you know,
the very slim Michael Winner.
Yes, a very slim Michael Winner. He looked great, with his fiancée, Geraldine.
I was reading this morning about his Fat Bastard Diet book that he's
I haven't
with.
Read that yet, but I flipped
seems
through the
hysterical.
Papers. Yeah, it seems hysterical.
But he is very funny. He's a very witty man.
Very funny. So I took photographs of everybody at the party.
So you like the unofficial photographer. You just like standing
exactly.
at the corner
there were
and just...
There were official photographers, and I had a couple of little Sony cyber shots, which I love. And I just put them all on my laptop, and I'm cropping them and taking out the red eyes and, you know... It's fun. It's my hobby.
Is it?
Yeah.
And then you're developing a TV series for Fremantle, I read as well.
Yes.
And what is that? Is that a travel program? Or?
No, it's a reality. It's not reality. It's a fictional series called Rich Girls.
Okay.
About a nightclub in Hollywood called Mood and all these girls that hang out there. Like, you know, there's the little ex-child movie star who's now a movie star with a very pushy mother. There's the two heiresses. Not based on anybody you would even think of. In fact, I interviewed Paris the other day for Elle magazine in England. It's out now on the stands, and she's an interesting girl, Paris. She comes across, when you talk to her, when you spend time with her, one word always comes to mind, and people always say it, and that's sweet. And I know people out there are going to be going, oh, no, are you kidding? But she is. When you meet Paris, she's very, very sweet. She's very demure. Now, of course, I've seen the videos like everybody else, and I know she ain't that demure. But she is, you know, I've known her since she was 10 years old. We had a fun time.
But don't you think that made
men... You're opening the doors for me here. You better be careful.
That made men like her even more, though, because she is sweet. We met her for an interview, and she was like, lovely and sweet. And then she is.
See? Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Let's move on.
I'm into equality.
I am, yeah.
Yeah.
Another song then. Here we go. A song will get us out of a dark patch. Okay. The Bee Gees. Well, how deep is your love? I mean, how... It's another very suggestive song title, but going back to those great old 70s and early 80s disco
days,
isn't it?
Didn't we all love Saturday Night Fever? I mean, when John Travolta strode across the screen in his... Screen,
yes.
In his white suit.
God.
How sexy was that?
Yeah, great image.
I mean, yeah, coming from, you know, the Bronx, and there he was, and he was going to, like, show everybody. I thought it was a fantastic movie. Mm. I loved it so much that I immediately sat down and wrote a short story for Rolling Stone, which was called The Rockstar and the Lifeguard, which I imagined would immediately be snapped up for a movie. I haven't made it yet, but I will make this movie because it's a very interesting short story. Yeah, so I love the fact that Saturday Night Fever was derived from a short story and that it made such a great movie.
And why do you, it's interesting, why do you think that story just had that appeal? What was it? Was it because of, I mean, obviously John Travolta, smoldering looks, Tony Manero was a great character, but there was something about that, great soundtrack, yes, but there have been lots of films.
Rags to riches.
Yeah.
I've always written Rags to Riches. Mm. People love that story. You know, he had nothing, and yet he got the white suit, and he's winning the competition, and he's coming from the Bronx, and he's getting the girls. It was great.
Mm.
And people love that. They love to see the underdog rise to the top.
So that's always the American dream, isn't it, still?
I think so. I always write that. I mean, because it appeals to me. Because I'm a school dropout. I dropped out of school at 15. Well, I was expelled, actually, but, you know, same thing.
And what were you expelled for?
I was expelled for actually never going to school. I played truant every day and went down to Leicester Square and went to the movies. And I was also expelled for waving at the resident flasher, who would be flashing when we went to play tennis on Tuesdays. He would flash in Regent's Park and I would go, oh, cold day today, isn't it? And they thought this was disgusting. And would I please shut up? So I was expelled. But it was great. I had a purpose for that story, didn't I? What was it?
Obviously, when you were young, I was trying to work out what you were doing.
Oh, yeah.
Did you always want to be an... At what age did you realize you wanted to be an author?
When I was 8. I remember my mother took me to Roehampton swimming baths. And it was, you know, how we always would pursue the sun in England.
Mm.
And it was a beautiful day. And we went to the swimming pool. And I just came home and I thought, you know, I think I want to write characters. And I took out my father's card table. We lived in a very small apartment. And I just laid out, you know, the pads and the papers. And I was 8. I always remember it and started to write. I knew it was what I wanted to do, create characters.
So that's quite incredible, isn't it? Age 8.
Yeah. Well, I loved reading. Mm. I was a loner at school, you know, when I wasn't going off to the movies. I didn't like the girls in my class because they all seemed so babyish. I was very old for my age, very adult. And so I was a loner. So I would read. And then after reading, I would want to write.
Okay.
It inspired me.
And at what age were you when you had your first body of work published?
I was 20-something.
Okay.
Yeah, the world is full of married men. Mm-hmm.
See, it's funny how you started. If you're, you know, at that age, you were talking about married men and affairs and all kinds of, you know.
Yes, well.
Life.
Yeah, exactly.
Life as we know it now. And here we are all these years later. You're doing the same thing. As you said at the beginning, look, you're writing about the same kind of things.
There's only so many stories.
Yeah.
You know, you think about it. There's birth, there's divorce, there's marriage, there's abortion. There's several subjects. I mean, there's like 10 subjects that you can write about. And it's the way people are. It's what happens in life, you know. But you just write it in your own particular way. I always advise people, because people are always coming to my website and saying, oh, I want to write a book. What do I do? I always advise them to write about what they know.
Mm.
Because you cannot write about Hollywood and get a map of the city and think, oh, I'm going to write about movie stars because I read The Enquirer once. You can't do that. You have to know your subject extremely well.
Mm.
I write about things I know extremely well. that I've either experienced or somebody has who's was there has told me about. Okay. And people reveal things to me all the time.
Yeah, are they stupid? They must be mad then, mustn't they? Because they know it's going to end up in a book.
I know. They're crazy.
Do you think they want? I know it sounds weird, though.
Yes.
Do you think they must want that to happen? They know you're going to use it as a character.
I'll be sitting at a Hollywood party, and I'll have a movie star on one side and a director on the other, and they'll be revealing all these things to me. And I'm thinking, well, don't they know I'm going to write about this? Because the directors and the producers know more than anybody.
Mm.
But then I have this other lot of friends who are like makeup artists and drivers.
They
know more than anybody. Yeah.
They hear the phone calls.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's weird how people confide in their driver or, you know, or their makeup artist. Just, it's like therapy, isn't it? While
yeah.
they lie there, just get off
with
their
drivers,
chest.
They don't even realize that they're sitting there driving the car. They're on their cell phones. They're making out with their boyfriend. They're doing all kinds of things in the back of the car.
So is Hollywood any worse now than it was, you know, back in its, well, people say the Hollywood heyday, back in the 50s and 60s and 70s, you know, have characters changed or is it just we know more about them now?
I think because, you know more about people now.
Okay.
I think way back it was the studios were controlled by big old moguls, you know, who sat in their office telling starlets to do unspeakable things to them and then put them in a movie. Now you just get those old, like, producers who have been around for a long time doing that. I mean, I think that now it's run by big business as opposed to the studio moguls. Studio moguls kept their stars under control. Now nobody can keep them under control. I mean, if Lindsay Lohan was doing movies way back, you know, maybe in the 60s or 70s, she wouldn't be allowed to do the things that she does. They would have controlled her.
Do you not think they ended up doing all those things, but we just didn't hear about
it? Of course
them?
They did all those things. I mean, there's a million stories about, you know.
Great stories.
Yeah.
And you've written loads of them.
Told a few of them.
Because
it's true.
You almost want to go through the books and go, right, who's this? Who's that one about?
People love playing the guessing game.
Yeah.
Well, that's fun. Yeah.
That's good for you, though, as well, isn't it? Because that means, you know, people are always going to be intrigued in your books and
exactly.
in your work.
I mean, Hollywood Wives. I mean, every chauffeur and maid and housekeeper in town was sent out on the morning it was published. And there literally were lines around the bookstores to get the book. Because there was so much written about it before it came out.
Yeah.
And I think in one's career, you always have a definitive thing that kind of spirals you upwards. And Hollywood Wives was mine. I mean, Chances was the fifth best-selling book in America the year before, but nobody knew who I was. But then came Hollywood Wives and everybody knew who I was and I became the expert on Hollywood.
Yeah. And you've been that ever since, haven't you?
Oprah used to come to town and we used to go around in a limo and I would point out all the Hollywood hotspots to her. I would take her to Spargo for lunch and stuff like that. And it was interesting. Of course, now my books are too raunchy for her.
Yeah, they're not featured in the Oprah Book Club then anymore.
No, I haven't been in the Oprah. The last time I was on Oprah actually was really funny because it was I had a book called Rockstar.
Yeah.
So I was on with Gene Simmons of Kiss.
Okay.
And Oprah, who you know is very grand now, says to him, okay, Gene, I hear you've got a very famous tongue. And out comes the tongue, which, you know, went on for days. And then she admired his tongue and then proceeded to read the most raunchy passage from Rockstar. And the audience loved it. They went wild. Yeah.
Yeah, but she's that is one woman who's definitely no fool.
No,
she knows what sells.
She's fantastic. Yeah,
she's a very clever lady, isn't she?
Yeah, very.
And is she a nice lady?
Yeah.
I mean, Oprah's terrific. Across as a really genuinely fabulous person.
Yeah, she is. She's a terrific woman. Really nice. And smart.
Yeah, well, and exactly, actually, a modern, sassy, and definitely not a bitch.
Yeah, exactly.
No.
Good, you've redeemed yourself.
Thank
He's
you.
Redeemed himself.
Okay, that's good. Now, you're working on another book at the moment, which is called Married Lovers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, and there's going to be a new heroine called Cameron.
Yeah, Cameron Paradise.
Now, she's an Aussie.
She's actually American.
Who's gone to Australia.
She went to Australia. Met this guy who's a champion surfer.
Okay.
And then they go off to Hawaii where he's offered this great job. But then he has an accident and he becomes incredibly abusive towards her. So she flees Australia and comes back to America, to Los Angeles, where she's this fitness instructor. And she interacts with these three very high-powered Hollywood couples who you'll never recognize.
Clearly.
And then all kinds of things happen.
Okay.
There's a murder.
Cameron Paradise, what a great
name.
Cameron
Paradise.
And when you write any of these now, do you think, gosh, this will be a great movie? Do you ever think, thinking films or do you never
think that? No, I never think that because I produce my own movies. The last one I produced was Hollywood Wives, The New Generation with Farrah Fawcett and Robin Givens and Melissa Gilbert. And we shot it in Canada, actually. We had to make Beverly Hills. We had to make Calgary in Canada, which is the coldest place in Canada, look like Beverly Hills. So we would have a truck full of palm trees, which would follow us around when we were filming. But anyway, since I produced my movies.
Can I ask why before we go on? What is it? Is it that much cheaper?
Yeah, that was that much cheaper.
That much cheaper to shoot in Calgary.
And I don't finance my own movies. Somebody right. else finances them. And so I have to go along with what they want.
Sure.
And they wanted Calgary. But we did. If you see the movie. And strangely enough, it's never been on English television, and I can't figure out why.
Yeah, we'd love that.
I know. Yeah. It's a terrific movie. Farrah is great in it, and it was really fun. But anyway, what was I saying? Gone off. I go off.
No, making movies.
Tangents.
I asked you whether you ever think film when you're writing.
So when I'm writing,
when
I cannot think film, because as a producer, I would be saying, oh, well, I can't let the character do this because it'll cost too much when we film it.
Yeah.
So I never think about filming when I'm writing.
Okay.
Because in the beginning of Married Lovers, for instance, she's in Thailand, she's in Australia, she's in Hawaii. I mean, that would cost a fortune to film.
But it would sound like a very sexy, great film to make, wouldn't it?
Because of the
locations.
Yeah.
And, you know, always young, fit, sexy people in it, which, let's be honest, we all like to look at.
Yeah, we do like
to look at them. She sounds gorgeous.
Yes. Oh, she is. She's gorgeous. She's 24. She's got, you know, like spiky, dirty blonde hair. Fantastic aquamarine eyes. She's smart, very, very smart, feisty, very, very feisty. And of course, all these guys fall crazily in love with her, and she just, like, you know.
I tell you,
we're
all thinking exactly what she looks like now.
Yeah. And we all great body, because fantastic abs. Okay. I love abs on a woman.
I'll take up Pilates and she can come and teach me.
Yeah, she would. That's what's happening in this book.
Is she? So she goes around and teaches
then
couples.
She meets this one married guy who's married to a Hollywood princess.
Okay.
And then the whatever hits the fan.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
You got it?
It sounds good. Is that another wild
Camera
and sexy
Camera in Paradise.
Oh,
yeah.
God. And okay.
And her two best friends are gay. Male gay.
Male gay.
One's black, one's white.
And is she straight or bi?
She's straight.
I just thought I'd ask in case there were wives involved here. Perhaps I was just fantasizing as well. Although we shouldn't do that. Right. One more song. Come on.
Oh,
one
yes.
more song. And we've got, how about Hero Enrique?
Enrique.
Beautifully sexy. Well, obviously from a family that was incredibly sexy with his father.
Yeah, his father still
looks
great.
And now he's carried it on.
And his grandfather. Did you ever get a look at his grandfather?
No.
I mean, this guy was like 92. He looked about 60 and he was having babies. I mean, crazy.
Really?
I read Hello Magazine, you know.
You do, yeah, clearly. Too much, clearly. Gosh. Yeah.
Oh, thanks a lot.
No. But Enrique.
Enrique. Do you have a program in England called How I Met Your Mother?
No.
It's a fantastic comedy series. When it comes here, you have to watch it. Anyway, he guested on it for the opening season. And he was so funny. He played this foreign lover of the girl that had just broken up with her boyfriend. And he has a great sense of humor, apart from being an incredible looking guy.
Yeah.
I think his voice is fantastic. And I think Hero is one of his best tracks.
I think I have to be honest that when it first came out, I wanted not to like him because he was the son of this really good looking dude. And, you know, Julio Iglesias, this sort of, sort of lover god, really, that he was, wasn't he? And this wonderful voice. And then comes the good looking son and you think, oh, God. And then he seemed quite sort of smooth when we first came in for an interview. But then we did some other stuff. He is funny, isn't he?
He's got
a very good sense of humor.
Oh, you would love.
And can take the mick out of himself pretty well.
Oh, that's exactly what he does on this program. And also he has a beautiful girlfriend.
Yeah.
But it's a good looking family, I must say. I think he's better than Julio. Much better.
What, vocally?
Or vocally.
Yeah, it certainly sounds great. I mean, Hero, this and his new one, the ping pong song, which is...
Oh, yeah, I like that.
Do You Know is incredibly
popular,
like
that.
Too. But okay, Hero, Enrique, that sounds very nice. Right, Magic 105.4, and just about the end of it with Jackie Collins. That's sad. We could have talked for a long time because this has been fun chatting with you.
Yeah,
I feel we've only scratched the surface.
I know we have. But by the way, I have a celebrity playlist on iTunes.
Have you?
Yeah, I think I've got Hero on it.
Have you?
Yes.
Okay.
I've certainly got Marvin Gaye. What's going on?
Which one? Sexual? Oh, What's Going On?
Yeah.
You see, that's an all-time classic.
Yeah, we should have had Let's Get It On. I love that track too.
Let's Get It On. Well, if we can squeeze that in as well, then perhaps you will.
Yeah.
Would you
great.
Prefer that to Sexual Healing?
No, I like Sexual
okay,
Healing.
Okay, it's good.
Yeah.
Actually, might end with a little bit of Marvin Gaye because Let's Get It On is gorgeous. Actually, something about he had a quality in his voice.
Or Let's Stay Together, Al Green. That's one of my favorite tracks of all time. Love that.
You really do love your soul. Where's that love of soul come from?
Well, when I was 15, I used to go out with a disc jockey who used to he used to write reviews for the Musical Express and stuff like that. And I always remember going to all the jazz concerts.
Okay.
You know, when Dizzy Gillespie would come to London and stuff, and would be in a cab, and I'd be 15, and they'd all be smoking grass, and I'd think, my parents are not going to like this if this cab gets stopped.
God, everybody. So you got you definitely got introduced to some interesting music then at an early age.
Oh yes, definitely.
And that stayed with you ever since.
Yeah, love soul music. Mm. Yeah, but I love rap too, and I love Latin music.
What, because of the passion of it? I mean, Latin is something we don't, I suppose, living in Los Angeles, you hear a lot of it.
Yes, you do. Yeah.
We don't have that much over here, but it's certainly something when we see salsa or, you know, we feel
salsa is great. I know, it makes you want to move.
It does.
Great. I love it. Mark Antony is fantastic.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
But also, it's about, I mean, you obviously like sexy things, don't you? Well, you know, not.
Yeah, I guess it's sexual
music. It is
music.
Watching the men and girls dance together.
Yes,
it's not rude.
Exactly.
It's what boys and girls do.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's what boys and girls do.
What a title for a book. It's what boys and girls do.
It has been very lovely to chat with you.
I've really enjoyed it.
And indulge with your music and a little bit about your characters and why they're there.
Yeah.
And will Lucky continue? I mean, obviously, this is our sixth outing.
I think so. Yeah. You know, I thought that people would be bored with her by now because she is married. She's got these grown children and everything. And I thought, well, they're going to be a bit bored. When I was doing this huge tour of America, I would say to people, and that, you know, there'd be lines of hundreds of people. And by the time they got to me, they would have read some of the book because they'd all bought the book. And they'd get to me and I'd say, so who's your favorite character? And I'm thinking they're going to say Max or maybe Anthony Bonar or something. And they'd all without fail say Lucky. I'm thinking, isn't she a bit boring? But she's not, you know. They love the fact that she's got this great marriage, that she's got these kids that she can deal with, that she's building the hotel. They just love this character. This character gives them strength.
So is that the dream, do you think, of what women would like to be? They would like to be, ultimately, strong. They'd like to be successful. But perhaps they like to have a solid marriage, a solid relationship. Because that makes you feel good, doesn't it, really?
Yeah.
Some proper roots.
Yeah, because this is what my heroines do. Anything when they're single. And when you're married, you should be faithful.
Mm.
Because marriage is great. And that's why the late Louis Malle called me a raunchy moralist.
Yeah.
Because my books are very raunchy, but I'm also a moralist.
Yeah, very true. Yeah, true. There are lots of people in your book that clearly aren't very moral.
Yeah.
But your heroes are.
Yeah, exactly. They have a sense of purpose and a sense of morality, which I believe in myself.
Are?
Yeah.
That's how you are.
Yeah. I would never cheat. If I was married, I would never cheat.
Right.
Yeah. Because that, to me, would be the end of the marriage.
Okay. Yeah.
What about you?
No, I've never been unfaithful, I pray I never will be.
And you know what? That's
like a
that's what
vase
makes an interesting
thought.
Man.
Really?
There's nothing interesting about a man that cheats on his wife. Why do you think I called my first book "The World Is Full of Married Men"?
Yeah.
I was hit on by so many married men; it was impossible, impossible.
Mm.
I mean, I was even chased around the table by the best man at my first wedding. Unbelievable. Who, of course, was a married man. And I would say the same thing to all of them. What about your wife? And they would all say the same thing. They'd say, oh, no, my wife is different. My wife would never cheat on me. My wife is different. If I heard my wife is different a million times.
Men. Brains in the trousers, eh?
Yeah.
Not right. All men.
Not all men.
Well, very nice to have chatted.
Yeah, this was great.
I thoroughly enjoyed this.
Yes, I did too.
The good news is that this, although Mellow Magic is coming up after us and then...
Yes.
This show is available as a podcast, which we always put up on the
fabulous.
Monday, which will be tomorrow.
Oh, great.
And it's the full unedited version. So if you would like some real sex insight and some naughtiness, then I have to say the unedited version of this has been quite good.
Yeah, it has.
We haven't gone too far, but
we've definitely gone
a little bit further than we should have done.
You know, there's a TV show in America. I think it's called Not Your Good TV or something like that. I can't remember the name of it. But you can go on there and say anything you want. So everybody gets on there and they're like, oh, great, you know, motherfucker, blah, 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 blah. And it's just fantastic. It's very popular.
I'll have to take your word on that.
Yeah.
Jackie Collins, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much. Magic 105.4. Magic 105.4.